This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, chapters 21 and 22, The Unknowable Room and After the Burial. In these chapters, Harry gets validated and unvalidated in his pursuit of Malfoy.
Yeah, I feel very stupid for not thinking of part of where he might have been, but now it only makes sense.
Yep. And then Harry finally completes his homework set forth by Dumbledore.
I wrote Harry the frat boy down here because his methods were a little, I don't know.
Dubious?
But yes. But, you know, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about that.
Are his methods dubious, or is the person he has to glean information from dubious and therefore, therefore those are the only tactics that work?
That's a good point. I don't know. I went some of that whatever Harry has. What's it called?
The Felix Felicis.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I take some form of that in modern pharmacy. But anyway, doesn't work that well.
All right, then. But first we begin with chapter 21, The Unknowable Room. And, you know, Harry has a newfound passion for his homework that Dumbledore gave him because he felt really ashamed last time.
Yeah, and it's kind of really challenging him to think outside the box.
And to the point that all he's doing is poring over his potions book to see if, like, the prince thought of anything. And Hermione, I think rightly, is saying, like, it's not about a potion or a spell or that form of trickery. Otherwise, Dumbledore could have done that himself.
I thought that was really, I mean, here we have Hermione again being smarter than everybody and emotionally intelligent too. I kind of thought, good on her for calling everybody out to use a different sort of like method. Not the best method for.
Yeah, again, dubious, just non-magically based.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, they're all sitting at the, in the common room. And there's a certain amount of excitement because the notice board announced the date for their apparition test.
Yeah.
Harry cannot take the test because he is not, the test can only be done for students who are 17 by the 21st of April, which Harry will not be.
Too young.
But by now, both Hermione and Ron are old enough to take the test.
But they have not, at least Ron hasn't, like, completed.
Yeah, he hasn't fully apparated yet. And Harry has only fully apparated once. Okay. Like, successfully.
Well, them's the breaks, everybody.
Yep. And then we've got, and then they're just hanging out in the common room. And Ron realizes that his, like, spell checker quill, like his Grammarly quill, has, like, gone haywire. And so Hermione has to re-edit everything.
I feel like Fred and George are going to have to do a recall on their spell check pens.
Well, it's an interesting notion that these charms have expiration dates and they do have shelf lives and it's not like perfect indefinitely.
Well, then they need to put an expiration date on these. I don't know if they. We could get really into the minutiae of the pen, but we won't.
Do that. And in his gratitude, Ron is just like, "I love you, Hermione." Hermione turned faintly pink, but merely said, "Don't let Lavender hear you saying that. I won't, what? Or maybe I will, then she'll ditch me." And it's like, why don't you ditch her if you want to finish it?
I think we talked about this and Ron's kind of like spinelessness in this situation. But I mean, I can't say I haven't been there myself.
Yeah, so. Like, you know, I think whether it was on or off mic, I had that huge tangent about like the lengths people will go to flat out being jerks, if not cheating or other forms of douchebaggery, just to take the responsibility of breaking up off of them.
Yeah, I mean, the crummy thing is, like, I'm sure there are many comedies based on that when that doesn't work. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, in an extent, it's kind of like you just don't want to hurt somebody's feelings, but just do it. Get it over with. But while they have their moment, a couple friends join us.
Yes, there's Crack and its creature, quickly followed by Dobby. Dobby has been helping too, Harry Potter, and he casts Creature resentful look, and Creature ought to tell Dobby when he is coming to see Harry Potter so they can make their reports together.
Oh my god, Dobby, like, he needs to chill.
Yep, so, and Hermione knew nothing about this.
Yes, of course, because she would, the ethics of this, she's not going to really love.
Yeah, so, and Dobby has not slept for a week, Harry Potter.
I love how he says this is, like, something he's proud of. It's just, like, the people that say, like, I was up till 4 in the morning doing this. And it's, like, that's not cool. Like, Dobby, get some sleep. Oh. I know he's kind of, like, show respect to Harry, but, and that's his, how he's been trained.
Yeah, so I was recently watching a video essay about, you know, on media and TV shows about the portrayal of performative workaholism.
Yes, that's exactly and what I was talking about.
Yeah, and there was one clip that they showed. It's like, where there's a guy totally sleep deprived, and it's like, and it's the morning, and these two guys walk in, and the guy is like, "Where were you?" And they're like, "Sleeping." And he's like, "What? All night?"
Oh my god. I had a work situation where this woman said she was up until 4 completing this task, and I was like, "I'm not clapping for that. Like, that's ridiculous." Yeah, that.
Well, I think I mentioned in previously that even at 17, I was taking note of, I don't like the fact that the only way to show your care is to borderline kill yourself and run yourself ragged. Like, that's not good. And so I'm just like, yeah, I'm just like, I'm not clapping for that shit.
No, thank you. So Dobby, get some sleep. That's what we're trying to say.
At least in the American context, I blame Protestant Calvinism.
And how do you mean? Because I have no idea.
It's, again, it's just the sense that there's an innate goodness in, like, working so diligently. And in a lot of ways, the workplace has kind of replaced the sphere in which people are pouring in their sense of purpose, their sense of transcendence, self-actualization, and all of those things in a time where traditionally that would have been, like, religion and other forms of society.
Yeah, I think it's always good to remind everybody your boss can fire you any minute. So without, you know.
Yeah. You could
just think about that.
You could get hit by a car and they'll replace you several months later. Or not replace you at all because they're waiting for a unicorn that will never come.
Neither of us know anything about that.
And so Creature is like, "Master Malfoy moves with a nobility that befits his pure blood," croaked Creature. "His features recall the fine bones of my mistress, and his manners are those of..." "Draco Malfoy is a bad boy," squeaked Dobby angrily. "A bad boy!"
I mean, Creature is kind of bobbing and weaving with his responses here, which, I mean, he's doing that annoying thing where he's, like, telling the truth, but dancing around it, so...
Yeah, because Harry's trying to get updates on, you know. And then, you know, Dobby, he's saying Draco Malfoy's a bad boy and then tries to lurch himself into the fire because he's so used to that habit of punishing himself. Because, again, the Malfoy used to be his masters.
Right, yeah. This freaking guy, man, just take it easy, yeah.
"But Creature should know that Draco Malfoy is not a good master to a house elf." Yeah, "we don't need to hear about you being in love with Malfoy," Harry told Creature. "Let's fast forward to where he's actually been going." And it's like, yeah. He goes to the Great Hall, he sleeps in a dormitory, he attends his classes in a variety of Dobby, you tell me.
Right, finally. Like, that's the whole reason he had him tail. I guess Harry was smart enough to realize that you were going to get some kind of BS.
Like, if it wasn't by pure luck that Dobby, like, sat in, was there when Creature was summoned, like, this could have gone very badly of, you know, again, yeah. I don't trust Harry's ability to, like, manage Creature, to, like, close all loopholes, or even just on general be able. So yeah, it's a good thing that Dobby, you know, was willing to do this. And
yeah,
Dobby is like, you know, he's not breaking any school rules. The only thing he's doing that's slightly out of the ordinary is that he keeps going to the Room of Requirement.
And this is where I felt like a freaking idiot, because it's like, oh my god, of course that's where, that's of course that's why they can't see him. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, because, and Hermione makes a good point of, you know, they've never seen the Room of Requirement on the map, and Hermione's like, probably because it's unplottable.
Right, and they don't. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so, and not, Malfoy's not just going there on his own, he's going there with a variety of students who are keeping watch as he's in there.
Who they believe to be Crabbe and Goyle, just disguised.
Disguised as various types of girls.
Right.
Typically younger girls. And I guess the point of that is just they're, again, using youthful female innocence to, like, not draw attention. Whereas if Crabbe and Goyle themselves were there, it'd be like, okay, what bullshit are you up to now?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's a little, since it's kind of known they all hang out, it's a little more suspicious.
And Harry's like, great, I'll be able to go in and spy on him, no problem. And Hermione's like, I don't think you will. Draco knew exactly what we were using the Room of Requirement for, but you don't know but you don't know what Draco's using the room for, so you don't know what it becomes. You don't know what to ask.
Right, yeah, that's something, because it's definitely not the same room. It can be whatever it needs to be.
Yep, and Harry's like, you've been done brilliantly, Dobby. And Hermione tries to say Creature's done well too, and Creature's like, the mudblood is speaking to Creature. You know, Creature will pretend he cannot hear.
He's such an idiot. And poor Hermione is just, you know, doing her thing.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that brightens Harry's spirits a little bit. And yeah, I'm just looking through the page. Yeah, they're talking about the theory of, you know, transforming into girls to keep watch for him. No wonder they don't look too happy these days. I'm surprised they don't tell him to stuff it. Well, they wouldn't, would they, if he's shown them his dark mark, said Harry. Said, the dark mark we don't know exists, said Hermione skeptically. And again, whether it's true or not, I've talked several times that the use of young teenagers in warfare, I guess, or in conflict, I guess, I'm coming from a place of doing a lot of research recently about, you know, white supremacy and, you know, various hate groups. And then also earlier than that, in my studies in the Middle East of teenagers joining ISIS.
Oh, yeah. God.
So, I'm used to viewing these sort of bad groups as not beneath utilizing underaged persons for their cause. And so I'm not totally sold on the assurity Hermione seems to feel about that the Death Eaters could be beneath this, especially the son of a known Death Eater who is now in Azkaban.
Yeah. That you just made me think of about a book I read about ISIS and teenage girls. Yeah. It was, gosh, I wish I remember the title, but it's been a long time.
That's a whole other topic. But anyway, and Ron is like, yeah, great, because he's still all consumed with his apparition test.
Yeah, probably. That's kind of, I guess, good for him. He's consumed with some sort of homework.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically, in the end, Ron and Hermione go off to do their, it's not their test, they go off to do, like, the practice in Hogsmeade, I think.
Yeah.
The extra, like, practice sessions. And so they go off to Hogsmeade, and Harry goes up to the entrance where he knows the Room of Requirement is.
Oh yeah.
And he's in his cloak, and he's like, I need to see what Malfoy's doing in here. And so he repeats it three times, tries various phrasings. Absolutely nada.
Yeah. It's but he does catch Malfoy coming out, right?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't see Malfoy coming out. But he keeps trying. Nothing's working. He tries for a full hour. That's a...
Oh, my God.
Like, that's a lot to just stand there and trying to... Like, I think that's, you know, again, the obsession part.
Yeah.
Like, again, because I told you, it took me an hour to get an Uber at 2 a.m. from the airport because, yeah, that was its whole thing. And when I finally got my Uber, I tipped them 40% to be extra nice.
I guess it's if you really want something to happen, like you really want to get home, you know, you'll figure out a way. And he really
and my work is paying for it, so.
Well, there you go. Like, even better.
Yeah. Yep. And so Harry goes off, is a little late for DADA. Late again, Potter, said Snape coldly. 10 points from Gryffindor.
Any reason.
Any reason at all.
Yeah.
And Seamus brings up this point of, how do you tell the difference between an Inferius and a ghost? Because there was something in the paper about an Inferius. No, there wasn't. If you had actually read the article in question, Mr. Finnegan, you would have known that the so-called Inferius was nothing but a smelly sneak thief by the name of Mundungus Fletcher.
What? Mundungus?
Yeah, and so, and Harry's like, I thought Snape and Mundungus were on the same side, muttered Harry to Ron and Hermione. Shouldn't he be upset Mundungus has been arrested? Well, and I'm thinking, Harry, he hates everyone in the order. Like, he doesn't
care. Yeah.
And, but Potter's, yeah, what do you think of this whole, like, bullying Harry because ghosts are transparent?
What is it? Ghosts are transparent and, oh, what was the, I'm sorry, inferior dead bodies are ghosts are transparent, but anyway, I was like, okay. I think it's interesting to have like another version of a ghost, kind of. That's what I thought. But as far as, you know, the Snape and Mundungus of it all, I don't know what to think.
Yeah, another 10 points from Gryffindor, said Snape. And this is Snape, you know, after Ron has attempted to come to Harry's defense. I would expect nothing more sophisticated from you, Ronald Weasley. The boy's so solid he cannot apparate half an inch across a room. And it's like, damn. That one's pretty good.
Yeah, he's got some good shot, Snape shade there.
Shots fired.
Yeah, for real. But an old friend, I don't know if I'd really call her an old friend, comes back.
Who?
Here in a moment. Our old friend Moaning Myrtle.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so after the lesson, you know, they go to the... in the bathroom, and it's like, Myrtle, this is the boys' bathroom.
Yeah, I mean, like, what does she care? She's kind of a perv, but I think my main takeaway from this is she talks about a boy being crying in there, and a young boy.
Yeah, a young boy's been crying, and, you know, people make fun of him, and he's not afraid to show his feelings and cry. And so what did you think of this tidbit of information?
So I thought, and I could be wrong, and that's fine. I really thought it might be Draco because of the like situation of him, like, I mean, he's kind of in a shitty spot. I know he's a jerk, but his dad is in Azkaban, right? And then he's kind of been had this big ask. So that was my inclination because I thought that would also be, maybe it's a little too on the nose, but that was who I thought it might be.
Okay, good dog ear that. We'll find out eventually. And Ron, it's so sad that Ron takes pleasure in not that Myrtle's the best person in the world, but he takes such pleasure in offending and enraging Myrtle.
Yeah, yeah, I don't like that. Like, I guess just in general, I'm very much, I think I'm sure I've said, I don't dish it because I can't take it type of person. So he seems to be he gets a little upset when his brothers kind of egg him on. So I don't know. Myrtle's an easy target too.
She's so easy, you know, to rile up that. Yeah.
Goodness.
Yep. And so then they go, they're going off to the test.
I think they're like, what is the test?
Who would turn 17 to take the test in a fortnight? I guess this is still more extra sessions.
I think they're going to try to figure out to Slughorn's office to try to like get the memory from him.
So whether it's the test itself or not, they go out to Hogsmeade for extra apparition, whether it's the test or just practice. And Harry goes back to the Room of Requirement.
Okay. This is him still trying to...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so he goes in and he realizes that there's a little girl there, but he knows from the Marauder's map that the real name shows up, that it's Gregory Goyle.
Yeah, so they were right.
Yeah, so Harry tiptoes behind Goyle, still in his invisibility cloak, and says, "Hello, you're very pretty, aren't you?"
God. It's like... I mean, everybody knows that's an invisibility cloak, right? Or, I mean... I'm just thinking about that.
Goyle gave a high-pitched scream of terror, threw the scale up in the air, and sprinted away, vanishing. And some people have said that this comes off as super creepy, but it's like, you know, I don't mind because, again, Harry knows that it's Goyle. He knows it's not a girl.
Right. Yeah. He's not being like a perv.
No. Yep. And so Harry keeps trying, and he gets so fed up that he kicks at the door, I think, and then his invisibility cloak slips off. But who should find him? Not any student, not a teacher, but who?
Miss Tonks, the person I had to look up because I wanted to see what she looked like. Yeah,
Miss Nymphadora Tonks. And she's like, "What are you doing here?" he said, scrambling to his feet. "I came to see Dumbledore. His office isn't there." "I know, he's not there. Apparently he's gone away again." "Do you know where he goes, I suppose?" "No, I don't." "What do you want to see him about?" "Nothing in particular. I've just thought he might know what's going on. I've heard rumors, people getting hurt." "Yeah, I know all about it in the papers. That little kid trying to kill his... The Prophet's often behind the times." "You haven't had any letters from anyone in the Order recently?" "No one from the Order writes to me anymore," said Harry. "Not since Sirius." He saw that her eyes filled with tears.
Whoops. Yeah.
I'm sorry, he muttered awkwardly. "I mean, I miss him as well." "What?" said Tonks blankly, as though she had not heard him. "Well, I'll see you around, Harry." And she walks away.
So he shares this news with Ron and Hermione. And I think they speculate that she might have been in love with him eventually.
Well, Harry's like, "I had a thought," said Harry tentatively. He felt strange about voicing it. This was much more Hermione's territory than his. "You don't sexist. Think she can't have been, you know, in love with Sirius?" "What on earth makes you say that?" "I don't know. But she was nearly crying when I mentioned his name, and her Patronus is a big four-legged thing now. I wondered whether it hadn't become, you know, him."
I know I was like...
Like, saying, this is, like, literally Harry is voicing your theory.
Yeah, exactly. I felt kind of... But they're related, or am I wrong?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Tonks is Sirius's cousin once removed, in the sense that her mother, Andromeda, was Sirius's first cousin.
Okay. Because for a second I was like, is that the thing?
Because if, you know, Andromeda's mother was... like 10 years older than Sirius, and therefore, like, even though there's a generation, like, there's really only like a 10-year difference between, like, 10 to 15 year difference between Tonks and Sirius.
Oh okay
it's like me at that age. Yeah, because it's like with me and my, like, I'm actually closer in age to my cousin once removed, because there's a huge gap between my mother and my aunt and my father anyway, and they're all of my first cousins are like 20 years older than me.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like,
so age-wise it's not too bad, but again, they're still related.
Yeah, okay. That's what although
from the popularity of House of Dragon, I don't think people care about that anymore.
Oh my god, no, they really don't. I guess as long as you're like,
I want someone to do a legit journal article about how Game of Thrones desensitized mainstream society from incest.
We need to rein it in. That's what I think. We all just lost our minds a little bit after 2 years of, I don't know. I haven't watched Hot D yet, so
I'll Hot get there. Hot D.
I've heard people call it Hot D, so
House of the
Dragon.
Oh my God.
I guess.
I get it, but.
Yeah. I haven't watched Hot D yet, but I'll get there.
Interesting cut because we ourselves are so familiar with incest because it's often a trope in Gothic literature.
That is very true.
Yeah, so we've had more exposure to it, and again, the use of it as a sort of scandal or social commentary on a variety of things. But yeah, the fact that, you know, that it's just, yay, like, Daemeria. Daenerys, whatever.
The doctor. I still need to get over that one day.
Yeah. Have you seen some of the clips? I haven't been watching the show, but I've seen clips. Have you been watching it consistently?
No, I haven't. Okay, I've watched one episode.
Okay, then I'll leave it for another day. But basically, it's saying that there's one fetish that's shown that's so terrible. It's like it's like you're okay with this fetish, but you're not okay with this fetish. But incest is okay.
Well, now I mean, the first episode, I was like, oh my God. So, yeah, maybe I'll have to give it a go. Maybe this winter.
Anyway, so yeah, overall.
So that's the speculation. Yeah,
this doesn't land nearly as scandalous as one would think of when it was published because we now live in the Hot D world.
Yeah, now we're in that world. And nobody really like pushes that, do they? They're not like, aren't they related? It's just kind of like, I don't know. And then it's just like everybody moves on. I'm looking.
Yeah. Like no notion of that is like discussed. And I guess it's just so ingrained, or at least, you know, Hermione from an intellectual standpoint understands that that is so common in wizarding society because of this pure blood mania.
That's kind of what I thought. It's like, oh, it's not like super wild to that to be happening in the wizarding world.
And also in the sense that even if they're related, like it's not like Sirius was going out to the bar to go get laid. His interactions with women were limited.
Right. That's very true. That's very true.
Like all he had was he had Tonks, Hestia, and Emmeline. Those are the only like witches his age that would be around.
Well, then his options were limited. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So anyway,
I'm covering the artwork on this next page.
So it goes back to what I said, doesn't it? Said Ron. She's gone a bit funny. Lost her nerve. Women, he said wisely, they're easily upset. And it's like grieving your cousin, whether he was your lover or not. Still just your family member.
Wisely, like, come on, Ron, that's not very wise.
Did you appreciate Hermione's comeback?
Yes, I did, because it reminded me of like how those videos of men getting super worked up about sports, you know, that was what that comment reminded me of.
Yeah, and yet I doubt you'd find a woman who sulked for half an hour because Madame Rosmerta didn't laugh at their joke about the hag, the heebel, and the mimbulus Mimbletonia.
And Ron scowled. Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry, friend.
Yep. And now we move on to chapters 22, After the Burial. And you saw a glimpse of the art, and so you weren't too brokenhearted about this death.
No. I mean,
you're very much in the same camp as Ron in regards to this matter.
Yes, even though I did have that delicious Ron's Nightmare beverage at a local bar, I'm not really mourning the loss of Aragog, but I did like kind of Hagrid's RIP, by the way, Hagrid. I don't think we've talked about
him. Oh, yes, this is, because it's been a week because I was traveling for work in Morocco, so I don't know exactly how long at this point that actor passed away. But it's just really sad because it's just very recently, there was like the 20th anniversary of all the, you know, actors getting together. And that, I forget, what is his name?
Is it Rupert? That's totally wrong.
No, Rupert Grint is Ron. Right. But that actor, you know, he went to that special and, you know, saw everyone. And he was just making a comment of how timeless the story of Harry Potter is. And that, you know, 50 years from now, like, you know, Harry Potter as a story will be around like 50 years from now, and he was saying like, sadly I won't be here, but Hagrid will be. And it's just like,
so everybody got allergic to whatever they were like sitting next to real quick when they heard that. Robbie Coltrane.
Yeah, Robbie Coltrane. And it's interesting. Robin Williams had actually wanted to play Hagrid.
I'm so glad he didn't. Because
yeah, it would
have been totally different.
She Who Must Not Be Named vetoed it because she insisted on an all-British cast.
Oh, wow. Okay. There's one decent decision, I think.
One. Yeah, so interesting to come to this chapter after that. And so now they're getting ready. Now they're fully going to go do the test.
Yeah, and Hermione's given Harry a bad time, telling him to shut the hell up about Malfoy. I wish that's how she would have phrased it, but
yeah. And Ron is hiding. And it's like, it isn't lavender, said Hermione warily. Oh, good.
Yeah, come on, dude. Just get it over with.
Yeah, but the girl, you know, gives a note, a letter, a piece of parchment to Harry, and he's like, that's weird. Like, Dumbledore said there would be no more until I got my homework done.
Right, right.
And so he's unfurling the scroll, totally thinking it's going to be Dumbledore, but instead of Dumbledore's long, narrow, slanted writing, he saw an untidy scrawl, very difficult to read due to the presence of large blotches on the parchment from where the ink had run. You're just
morning
shaking
a spider.
I mean, your head. So
it's just some of the things that Hagrid says are pretty funny related to this. But
yeah. So, oh, for heaven's sake, she said. Even Hermione's patience with Hagrid, because she's usually more patient with him.
Yeah, she's pretty forgiving of him.
Yeah, but even she cannot, you know, be like, are you serious?
Right, yeah. Like, it's, and then I think her main concern too, not only, like, Hagrid's pretty affectionate toward, you know, monsters, but her concern is really him asking them to leave when they've been kind of explicitly told not to leave. And
yeah, because there was even a point in Prisoner of Azkaban when Sirius was on the loose that Hagrid got really upset when they came. He's like, what do you do coming down here? Like, I'm not worth that, so.
Yeah, yeah. But he's obviously, like, in a state with this whole spider death.
And Harry's like, we've been down to see him by night before. Yes, but for something like this, we risk a lot to help Hagrid out. But after all, Aragog's dead. If it were a question of saving him, I'd want to go even less, said Ron firmly. You did meet him, Hermione. Believe me, being dead would have improved him a lot. Which I think, again, Hermione was not privy to that traumatic experience because she was in the hospital being petrified. So she doesn't have the same, you know, she doesn't have the same experience with Aragog. Therefore, she has more will. She has more capacity to be sensitive.
I don't think, you know, and even Harry, like, I don't think either of them feel any sort of affection toward Aragog. I think it's more, you know, as I think is a theme in Harry Potter, they're trying to be supportive of their friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, I suppose Hagrid will have to bury Aragog without us. Yes, he will. You know, look, potions will be almost empty this afternoon with all of us doing our test. Try and soften Slughorn up then. 57th time lucky, you think, said Harry bitterly. Lucky, said Ron suddenly. Harry, that's it. Get lucky. What do you mean? Use your lucky potion.
I'm glad that's what he meant.
Like, what did you...
get lucky. Let's ring it in here, people.
Oh,
we're...
my God.
Sorry, that's... I had to take the... I had to go low. Yeah. Yes, so good on Ron. He's
has one good idea in how many hundreds of pages? How many books?
Right, right, right. What is he like? Good at chess and
good. He's good at chess, and that's about
it. Using potions, I guess, or recommending potions be used.
Well, that again, I think we probably discussed it in book one. I don't like that the books don't build more on. By Ron being good at chess, that indicates other attributes of strategy and, you know,
right.
And tactical analysis and, you know, you know, they could have, like, balanced it out where Hermione has all the, like, emotional intelligence and Ron, even if not the most emotionally intelligent, has the most tactical, like, knowledge and being able, again, giving Ron something.
Right, right. Yeah. Yes, give him something other than just to be a doofus the whole time.
Well, I think the point is he has a lot, but he just doesn't apply himself because he's so insecure.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So Harry decides, and Harry's thinking, like, I really wanted to save the Lucky Potion. What for? And basically, he wants to use it to get lucky with Ginny.
Oh my god. Sorry, I'm like a teenager giggling about that. Well, Harry, you can figure out another way. I think this is a better use. Like,
yeah, and so goodness. It's decided, you know, if he can't get Slughorn to talk this afternoon, he's going to drink the potion and go back to have another go in the evening.
Good thinking there, buddy.
Yep. So, and then as they're two girls that look really sad that are walking by, and they're the Montgomery sisters, and their little brother was attacked by Fenrir Greyback and ended up dying.
Yikes. This is the werewolf that gives, like, Lupin a bad name, pretty much.
Yeah, this is the werewolf that bit Lupin.
Yeah.
This is the werewolf that's the most notorious. This is the werewolf that Malfoy threatened Borgin with.
Yikes. Scary.
Mm-hmm.
Cool name, though.
Yep. So there's only three students in potions that day, Harry, Ernie, and Draco, because they're the only ones that are still too young to take the apparition test.
I know that life. I'm a summer baby, so I was always the youngest in my class.
Yeah, no, I was April, so I was always, you know, on the cusp.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, well, Slughorn doesn't give him a quote-unquote free day, but he's just like, just brew me something that you want to brew me, which I think is pretty fun. Snape would have never done that.
No, hell no. He would have, taken 10 points from Gryffindor and then just, I don't know, for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so Harry decides, okay, this is my perfect opportunity. I'm going to make, like, was it Elixir of Euphoria or, like, something about Euphoria?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So, and of course, Slughorn is so impressed. It's like, Euphoria, I take it. And what's that I smell? You've added just a sprig of peppermint, haven't you? Unorthodox, but what a stroke of inspiration, Harry. Of course, that would tend to counterbalance the occasional side effects of excessive singing and nose tweaking. I really don't know where you get these brain waves, my boy, unless Harry pushed the Half-Blood Prince's book deeper into his bag with his foot.
God, Harry, I know this is going to catch up with him. I just don't know when.
It's just your mother's genes coming out in you, which, you know, it's one thing to say that, oh, you have your mother's talent, you know, especially to a kid who, like, didn't grow up with their parents, like, that whole sentiment, that it's not that sentiment is wrong, but when you say your mother's genes, that's very eugenics.
Yes, it's Slughorn the anti-Semite. He can go hang out with Kanye West.
Is he? I haven't been following that shit. I've rarely followed the Kardashians.
I have been, like, subjected to it. My somebody that I know got an email from their company saying they, like, are not anti-Semitic or something. Like, it's just gotten stupidly out of proportion. But
anyway, the only celebrity scandal I care about in the slightest is the Try Guys, where Ned has been kicked out because of cheating. Because, you know, obviously, because the reason why people take that one so seriously is because, you know, the Try Guys market themselves as being, like, a good example of non-toxic masculinity in terms of them being able to laugh at each other and do stupid things together. And the fact that Ned, his whole personal brand, both inside and outside the Try Guys, was my wife this, my wife that. And so the fact that he thought that would be a good idea.
The way I feel about that is, like, Keith and Eugene, keep it together. Cause I love those two. They're great.
Well, again, in a way, Ned was my least favorite. Like, cause I like all the others. Keith, Eugene, and Zach.
Yes, all, Zach.
Okay. Yeah. But so they're going to be the real Try, T-R-Y, T-R-I, the real Try Guys now.
literally.
I want Kwesi to be the new black Try guy.
I don't even know who that is.
It's the black guy who they get to, guest with them several times. But anyway.
Oh, okay.
I digress. That's the only one I care about, but.
Well, you just brought up the latest Kanye mouth off and his Gene talking. Good old sluggy.
Yeah, because also with Gene's, it also made me realize, unfortunately, with the evolution of the access to like birth control and the pill, that did have a eugenic basis to a certain extent.
Yes, it did, Margaret Sanger. Look it up before you sing her praises too much, everybody.
Yeah. Anyway, so Harry's like, "Sir, don't you want to taste my potion?" But Slughorn's already out the door.
Yeah, he's on to this. He's like, he knows what's going on. He's not an idiot.
Yeah. And then Ron and Hermione come back, and Hermione's like, I passed. And what about Ron? He just failed. He left half an eyebrow behind.
Damn, that's some details. Like, oof. Yeah. That's pretty intense.
And it's just interesting, this dynamic of, Hermione being so tolerant of Ron now. And again, obviously, Ron just got poisoned.
Yeah. Right.
And, but she's being so consoling, like fixing his essay, and she's like, "But half an eyebrow," I know, said Hermione soothingly. It does seem really harsh. Like, she's being so nice to him, which, again, I don't know is fully warranted.
I think it's the love is blinding thing. Like, she's just seeing him through rose-colored glasses a little bit right now. And she's, I don't know if, she, I think, and then, his mortality. And maybe I should. Not saying it's right, but I know love makes people do dumb things.
Indeed.
Not from experience at all.
Indeed. And so Harry doesn't want to waste all of his potion, so he's just going to drink like a mouthful just for a few hours.
Smart.
Yep. And so he drinks it, and he's like, "Okay, excellent. Now I'm going down to Hagrid's."
And they're like, "What the hell?"
And they're like, "What?" "Yeah, I got it. I'm going to Hagrid's. I've got a good feeling about going to Hagrid's." "You've got a good feeling about burying a giant spider?" "Yeah. I feel like it's the place to be tonight, you know what I mean?" "No," said Ron and Hermione both together, looking positively alarmed now. "This is Felix Felicis, I suppose. Like, you did drink the right potion."
Right, yeah.
Jealous. Yeah, so how did you feel all of this panned out in terms of hoodwinking Slughorn to coming down by appealing to his greed?
Romantula
venom.
Yeah, and he finds out a lot more in Hagrid's little hut there, so Hagrid better put a lock on that door. I was trying to kind of like figure this out. Obviously this serum does not make you see the future. Otherwise that would be a whole different thing, but it's kind of a series of fortunate events, and I guess it's the luckiest day of your life. Right. So
yeah.
Does that matter? I don't remember.
In terms of what Harry's giving, the dosage, again, is just time length. He only drank a little bit for a few hours. The whole bottle he had would have been 24 hours.
Okay. Forgot about that. Whatever. Dumbledore told him to get this done, and obviously, like, it's the most important thing. So this part I don't have a problem with. Like, I don't have a problem with him, kind of playing to Slughorn's vanity a little bit.
Yeah. Because literally he's like, "Of course I wouldn't want to do anything insensitive if Hagrid is upset, but if it was any way to procure some, it's almost impossible to get venom from an Acumantula while it's alive."
I mean, gross, but whatever, I guess. Yeah, I couldn't do it.
Ooh. Yeah, it seems awful and waste not to collect it. Might get 100 galleons a pint. To be frank, my salary is not large. So ultimately, Slughorn's avarice wins out, and he's like, "I'm going to go change my tie and come back with a bottle or two."
I mean, whatever. He is nothing but a, what is it? Opportunist, I guess.
Indeed. And Hagrid's like, you came, croaked Hagrid when he opened the door. Yeah, Ron and Harry, Hermione couldn't, though. They're really sorry. Hagrid gave a great sob. He had made himself a black armband out of what looked like a rag dipped in boot polish. And his eyes were puffy red and swollen. Harry patted him consolingly on the elbow, which was the highest point of Hagrid that he could easily reach.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and it's like, where...
Yeah,
where are we burying him? The forest? And then it comes out, no. It turns out the other spiders, they won't let me anywhere near their webs now. Turns out it was only on his orders that they didn't eat me. Can you believe that, Harry?
And Harry's like, his honest answer was, yes. It's like, yeah, no shit. These people had, Harry and Ron had a very close encounter with these spiders, so.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hi.
Oh, ghost or gibbous?
Mr. Gibbous. My boy.
Because he's your, because you're his favorite.
It must be.
It wasn't easy getting Aragog's body out of there, I can tell you. They usually eat their dead, see? Ugh. But I wanted to give him a nice burial, a proper send-off. He broke into sobs again, and Harry resumed the patting of his elbow.
I mean, I don't know. I guess to each their own, Hagrid. Yeah.
And then Hagrid again. Typical Hagrid thinking the best of people. That's right nice of him, as in Slughorn.
Yeah.
I've never really had a lot to do with Horace Slughorn before. Come to see old Aragog, though. Well, he'd have liked that, Aragog would. Harry thought privately that what Aragog would have liked most about Slughorn was the ample amount of edible flesh he provided.
Gross, but yeah, probably. Like, what do you, when people die, what did they call that? When they were like all of a sudden saints?
I first heard that. I didn't watch like all of it religiously, but I watched a few episodes of Pretty Little Liars.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The girl who died, or quote unquote supposedly died, I don't really know because I didn't go to the end. But, you know, the teenage girl who died, like, she was a bitch. And one of her like bullying victims basically says, like, dying doesn't make you a saint.
Yes, exactly. I feel like we're canonizing, or what, that's the word I think I was looking for. We're canonizing Aragog, but
yep. And then Slughorn comes down, and so they go. There's already a big hole in the ground for him, and Slughorn. You know, well, first Slughorn goes, and Hagrid's too consumed by his tears to notice the clinking of bottles as, you know, he's. Literally getting all this venom from, from Aragog.
A little sleazy Slughorn, but I don't think.
Yeah, it's both his personality, and he is a potions master. He just like,
right,
like that's just like you got. This is the only time you get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a giant spider.
Yeah, of course, it's difficult for you who knew him best. Why don't I say a few words? And. He must have got a lot of good quality venom from Aragog, Harry thought, for Slughorn wore a satisfied smirk as he stepped up to the rim of the pit and, in a slow, impressive voice, farewell, Aragog, king of arachnids, who long and faithful friendship those who knew you won't forget. Though your body will decay, your spirit lingers on in the quiet web-sun places of your forest home. May your many-eyed descendants ever flourish and your human friends find solace in the loss they have sustained.
I think Slughorn's just like, this is, there are people like Slughorn, and this is just what they do. They're just like, you know, I guess bullshitters. I wouldn't call them that. They're just like great at flattery. And I mean, because the purpose of this, he's not like, he grateful for the venom, sure, but also to kind of like satiate Hagrid, which he was.
Yeah. That was beautiful, howled Hagrid, and he collapsed on the compost heap, crying harder than ever.
Oh my gosh, Hagrid.
Yeah, there, says Slughorn, waving his wand. Let's get inside and have a drink. Get to his other side, Harry, that's it. So, yeah. So then they all, well, at least, you know, Harry's not drinking, but the two adults getting shit-faced.
Yes. And Harry is just going to sit back and let it happen.
I haven't been to enough funerals where is this generally a practice.
That's funny. I don't think I've been in that situation either, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can ask some people.
Yep. And then they're again getting more getting more drunk. Harry is like refilling the glasses surreptitiously under the table with his wand.
Yep. This so, is again, fuckboy.
This very, yeah, so you take issue with this element.
So there's a movie called Promising Young Woman.
Oh yes, and I've seen it.
Okay. And then the first scene where the whole thing that they, I guess they deliberately cast male actors that looked like nice guys.
Or who had a history of playing nice guy characters. As, right. You know.
Yeah. Like Bo Burnham and Adam Brody, who was one of my personal favorites. So the Adam Brody character at the very beginning, you know, is just pouring a little extra in her drink than his. And that's just such, that's gross behavior. So this was like my, that's a frat boy move, Harry thing. Granted, he's not like, he wants to elicit information a little less diabolical than, you know, what the intentions were in Promising Young Woman. But still, yeah. I was like, oh man, that's such a frat boy move, Harry.
Yeah. And it also kind of reminds me of, you know, she goes and gets revenge on the girl, Madison, who, because she didn't believe her friend, like, so, you know, she turned the tables where she put something in her drink to make her forget and wake up in a hotel, and she didn't remember what happened.
She does. She gets her really drunk at lunch, and then they go up to a hotel room and just with a guy, and nothing happens.
I don't think anything happens, but it's just the sense of, you know, you had no sympathy for my friend who didn't know what happened, and now you're in the same situation.
Right. Yeah. Good movie. So, check it out, everybody.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yep. And so finally, they're toasting to everyone. And then finally toasting Harry Potter.
Of course. You know,
the Harry Potter, the chosen boy who will summon that sort. And so, and basically Hagrid slumps down and starts like snoring. Like he's out.
Yeah. Sorry, I was laughing at his toast to friendship, to generosity, to 10 galleons a hair.
Yeah.
How silly.
Yeah. So sorry. Can't carry. Hagrid wasn't talking about your singing. He was talking about my mom and dad dying. Oh, yes. That was terrible. Terrible. I don't suppose you remember it, Harry. And so Harry is very gory in his details.
Yeah.
Of his parents' death. Not that that is typically how he goes about it, but he's trying to shock. Because someone like Slughorn, who is so invested in self-interest, like not even the only way to shock him again and cajole him into doing the right thing is to show the dirty and ugly truth of what his complicity implies.
Right.
And she's like, what does Harry say? You liked her, didn't you? Liked her, said Slughorn. I don't imagine anyone who met her wouldn't have liked her. Very brave, very funny. It was the most horrible thing. But you won't help her son. Yeah, she gave me her life, but you won't give me a memory.
Man, he is like a good, I mean, whatever. You gotta get it done.
Yeah, don't say that. It isn't a question. If it were to help you, of course, but no purpose can be served. It can. Dumbledore needs information. I need information. I am the chosen one. I have to kill him. I need that memory. You are the chosen one? Of course I am.
Which this is like, Slughorn obviously knows a lot more than he's ever led on. So.
Yeah. But then, my dear boy, you're asking a great deal. You're asking me, in fact, to aid you in your attempt to destroy. You don't want to get rid of the wizard who killed Lily Evans? Harry, of course I do. But you're scared. He'll find out you helped me. Be brave like my mother, Professor. I am not proud, he whispered through his fingers. I am ashamed of what that memory shows. I think I may have done great damage that day. You'd cancel out anything you did by giving me the memory. It would be a very brave and noble thing to do.
Yeah, so he gives it to him. I mean, eventually he drops it in the little glass. And what is, this is really kind of, what is Slughorn's thing? He's like, you know, presentation, how it looks on the outside, and this is a huge threat to that, apparently.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Professor. You're a good boy, said Professor Slughorn, tears trickling down his fat cheeks. And you've got her eyes. Just don't think too badly of me once you've seen it.
And do we know what it is? Of course not, because that was the end of the chapter.
Indeed. That was the end of the chapter. So. Yep. Things. So Harry, again, finally completing his homework. I can't exactly remember the timeline, but several months. At least a month or so of... Again, the worst thing Harry did was to raise Slughorn's alarm by just asking outright. Killing almost... Yeah, like, literally, they're suggesting in this context that Slughorn won't remember, and Slug was too inebriated, too drunk to, like, have his usual guard up, but yeah.
Well, maybe a few more chapters later I'll find out what it is.
Yeah. So, anyway, and now we move on to Gothic Geek Out.
Well,
what?
I'm thinking about my Gothic Geek Out. You pointed out a very Gothic thing, so that unfortunately was not mine. The incestuous possibility of, you know, the Tonks.
Serious ship.
Serious. Yeah, the serious ship. But I was just, you know, my favorite thing. Shoot, I named one of my animals about after it was the ghosts. I love when we talk about different categories of ghosts and different, you know, iterations of life after death. So happy Halloween. That was my pick.
Yeah, well, because that comes up in the context of what is a ghost versus what is an inferior, aka a zombie. So
right. Right. Yeah, two of my favorite things.
Yeah. So, yeah, because I've never liked zombies. I've never liked their, like, banality. They're gross.
I guess favorite things is not really the right thing. I like a good zombie story. Or mid-2000s,
the genre.
Some good stuff. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
parallels
so...
to consumerism, all of that jazz.
Indeed. Well, again, if coronavirus taught me anything, is that we're not going to band together for the zombie apocalypse. We're just going to destroy each other.
No, we're not. No, we're not. We're all, yeah. You got to find your team. Our friend Morgan, I'm on his team. You can join our team.
Okay.
And, yeah.
I have the beginnings in my mind of a story, whether it would be a novel or just like a short story, novella, but it's about like basically not a zombie apocalypse, but a werewolf apocalypse. Where,
that's fun.
I'm sure it's been done before, but yeah, the idea that like the coronavirus, this like werewolf virus spread, and but not only that, because white evangelicalism is taking over, that when society crumbles and the only like those few scattered compounds, it's basically in essence like a tyrannical Puritan village.
Ugh,
you know, that fault that is super religious and whatever.
That, you made me remember, though that is not the concept, but Werewolf at Midnight, it's on the Disney Channel with one of my favorite actors, Gael Garcia Bernal. It's like
an
MCU thing. It's fantastic. I loved it. Does not deal with anything that you just talked about except werewolves. So.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. This wasn't, quite frankly, I hadn't thought of any of our activities because, again, it's been a while. Again, I came back at 4 a.m. from, you know, Casablanca, and I took a nap in the middle of the day, so I didn't have time to prepare. But yeah, we can go further into, again, the notion of incest, because in this wizarding society that's very close-knit and secretive and various threads which are super puritanical about their pure blood mania, you know, it isn't perceived as that shocking, the possibility of Sirius and Tonks having that sort of relationship. And, you know, in Gothic literature, the biggest example I think of is Shadow of the Wind. Because it ends up, you know, the lovers, and, you know, one of the only things that I was able to like predict that, yeah, they're going to be half-sister, and it's going to be that scandal of their having an affair and their half-siblings. Because that's the one that I think comes up the most. And then I think I told you about, you know, you weren't there for that episode, but the Quickening by Rhianna Ward, where you could tell in her writing, and we talked about it, that she was very much, like, setting something up to show that two, lovers were actually half siblings, but she, but it's never revealed, so I don't know if she meant to just abandon that plot or she just decided not to reveal it and leave it, you know, ambiguous. But yeah, she did admit, yeah, that's where I was going, that they were going to be half sibling, half sibling lovers. So yeah, the sibling, because again, traditionally, you know, with the historical context of like cousin marriages being like completely normal, like Victoria, who loved her Prince Albert so much, he was her first cousin. So in this already super, you know, close knit, where cousin marriage is totally acceptable, the only way you can get really scandalous is for it to be siblings.
Yeah. You know, that is not my favorite trope in Gothic literature. I'll just go ahead and say that. I would prefer not to read that. I don't know. I mean,
I'll admit that I was very fascinated by the Borgias when they portrayed, you know, Lucrezia and Cesare Borgia's relationship, because just the deeper sense of, because it's not so much about like, you know, this, you know, the physicality of it. It's more the sense of, you know, when you're playing, when you're in these situations in these families playing the Game of Thrones, whether it's in actual Game of Thrones or in history, you know, that sense of you literally, and you go through life, you cannot trust anyone but your family. And therefore, you don't develop any emotional intimacy with anyone outside of your family. And, you know, making sense of why, you know, that could, you know, lead to incestuous relationships, because like, you know, they live in such a world, because you're living in such an environment where to put your trust in someone outside the family could be like signing your death warrant.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that makes sense, especially in that context. And I'm like, why do I have such a block about this? I think I have a brother, and so who, there was a movie I couldn't watch because like he looked too much like the romantic lead in a movie. I was like, oh my God, Sam Hugan or whatever he was in, My Cousin Rachel.
I finished reading that for my Gothtober.
Oh, good. Cool. Well, my brother looks like that actor. I mean, like, it's kind of scary. But like in the context that you gave, it makes sense in the modern times. And I also kind of wonder, like, in, you know, I have a sibling of the opposite sex, and I don't know. Interesting, creepy, gothic shit.
Yeah, I cannot, not obviously not in the sense of condoning, but I'm not capable of having the same visceral reaction because I never had a sibling of the opposite sex. I only had one sibling. So I have no real life situation to possibly compare it to for me. Like all the stuff on Game of Thrones, on Hot D, like all of that is just still in the realm of intellectual abstract.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, I don't know if I had a sibling of the same sex, it might be a similar story too for me, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's very,
the question mark of incest with, in 13th Tale. Because it's not flat out, revealed. Because again, the twins' mother comes back, and it's left ambiguous whether it was actually her husband or whether it was actually her brother's children. You know,
and then it also made me think of Crimson Peak. I don't remember if they were, but there was definitely a suggestion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
If you're Loki and Jessica Chastain,
I mean, yeah, come on, Tom Hiddleston, like, it's you can't. I would have a hard time saying no to Tom Hiddleston. We're talking about incest. That's why what I mean. I mean, just in general, he's a very attractive man. Yeah, incest. My fan fiction is so trash. So, but we can. I kind of pulled it out of left field too.
So, yeah, no. Another way I'm thinking of incest is we did not cover it on Sublimely Gothic, but it's a YA gothic that I really like called The Cousins.
I don't think I've read this. Cousins.
It was really good, and basically it's the sense of the story is that the grandmother has disinherited all the kids, but then after so many years, invites all the grandchildren to go. And all the parents encourage it because maybe you'll get something out of the inheritance for our side of the family. And so all of the kids go, but one of the kids is actually not a family member. One of the cousins, like, took, you know, had a replacement go on his behalf. And so one of the other cousins, a female cousin, realizes that this guy is a fraud, but keeps, you know, keeps the facade going. But they end up liking each other and they're caught kissing. And so everyone thinks their cousin's kissing.
Oh, no. That's it. You also make me think of Luke and Leia. Like, what if you just didn't know? You know?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Look behind me. Look behind me. She just jumped on the shoulder.
Oh, Ghost. So cute. And it's like, excuse me. Don't you know I live here?
That's the second time she's done that to me today. It scared the hell out of me. Hey, Henri. Sorry.
Oh, good. She didn't like scratch your shoulder, did she?
Is it kind of, but it's fine.
Like, not really bad.
Yeah, you're not. It's not terrible.
Oh. Sorry. I cannot cut. It's a good thing that Cupcake is not an aggressive, you know, cat, because just trying to cut her nails, like, she, like, we can't do it. Like, we can't give her a bath either. Like, she just.
I have not tried with these two. Thankfully, they lick each other. Ghost, come here. She's bored. She wakes up and she wants to play.
Yeah. Alrighty then. So yeah, good stuff. That actually wasn't my gothic geek out, but it's, yeah, going into the incest thing. The only thing, because again, I'm just making this up on the fly because I'm so tired. Just the notion of a burial, a funeral, you know, and the funeral of a very poignant, you know, dark symbol, the spider.
Yes. 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 Tell me more about the funeral.
Oh, nothing. It's just usually a funeral. Again, usually the death of a patriarch or something is usually what triggers the inheritance, which causes the haunted protagonist to go to a haunted house. But
well, then I guess there was some inheritance in that, like, Slughorn got some venom, very expensive.
Possibly. Venom. But if I ever write my high fantasy novel, I want the spiders to be good and they're going to be nice, and I will break the stereotype.
I would appreciate that as a terrified of a spider person. Let's give them some. Funny enough, I'll pick up little spiders, but there's a certain size they get to that I know things. But
yeah, my sister was one where it's like, you know, if they were not like slimy and weird, like, she prefers the furry ones.
You almost made me throw. Like, those are the worst. Oh my god.
And she's like, I could pet a tarantula, but it's all the yucky, like, tiny, slimy ones.
I'm like, I can't, my skin is crawling right now. Like, oh my gosh, that's, ugh, how, well, anyway. good for your, good, Holly, that's fine.
Yeah, so, anyway, so yeah, but I think I have nothing more in depth to add. I think we poignantly discussed incest in gothic literature, and that was good.
I think we did get there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we move on to Tarot of the Day. And I did not pick them beforehand, so I'm going to pick one now. And I'm shuffling. Two, we already did that one, so I'm gonna do another one. Seven of Wands.
Okay.
Seven of Wands. So let's get, what's the little book say? Seven of Wands. Wands, element of fire.
Element of fire.
Yeah, and this is from my crow tarot. So it's like, the crow tries to defend his territory at the top of the mountain. The approaching crows below are all too eager to knock him down and take his spot. This card, it's a reminder that although you've made it, you must not be complicit, as there will be those who believe your position should be theirs. The Seven of Wands asks that you remain self-confident and have courage when facing challenges. It won't always be easy at the top, but you've earned the right to be there. So, seems, in this context, seems to espouse the view that taking power is one thing, maintaining power is another.
And how do you mean a little bit more? Taking powers.
Well, just the symbolism of, again, if you see, our listeners can't see, but if you see the card itself, we've got the crow on top.
Oh, yeah.
But the others are waiting around, just waiting for him to, like, make a misstep and take power again.
Oh, yeah.
It's just the challenges of maintaining power. And, you know, I think I relate that to in these chapters of Harry getting a lot of power in the sense of getting a large piece of the Draco mystery unlocked, but it doesn't solve everything.
No, and I guess, you know, the knowledge is power, so getting the memory from Slughorn to kind of continue on that discovery.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think here. I'm going to look up, you know, to my traditional website that I usually go to for the definitions. Seven of Wands. Yeah, biddytarot.com. You never fail. Even with your stupid advertisements sometimes.
They do have a lot of ads on there.
Yeah. After there it is, the stupid advertisement. Close. After the success of the Six of Wands, you are now in an enviable position and are being challenged by others who want to take your place. You worked hard to get where you are, but some people covet what you have and are prepared to fight you for it. While it is flattering that they strive for your success, it also makes for a tense and competitive environment because you need to protect what you've earned and must continually prove yourself. It is a sad fact of life, but the more visibility you have as a leader in your field and the bigger your audience, the more likely it is you will need to grapple with this kind of pressure. Preach, that's what my husband is dealing with a lot in terms of becoming a prominent public figure within the Iranian diaspora as being a voice of the opposition. And of course, more and more people are throwing shade at him. And like, they even did something when they can't like genuinely counter argue my husband's like political, you know, sociopolitical analysis, they'll say things like, oh, how long did it take you to do your hair this morning? And it's like, my husband's hair is natural. And that's, everyone has always been jealous of it.
If he's got hair, and I think I remember how old he is, but, you know, that is an enviable situation. That's also such a dumb take, like to attack somebody's appearance is just like,
well, it's just interesting because it's like that guy was doing what people always do to women in power, like attack their appearance when they can't attack anything else.
It's just this, it's like the easiest thing. I was thinking about as far as like saving face and stuff like that. Again, I guess I'm obsessed with him tonight, but Slughorn and, you know, his like, that's kind of his thing. And then he's giving that up in,
He's in a place of, you know, having, you know, a desirable position and good rapport with his fellow teachers, with his fellow students. And so for him, he's on top and, you know, things are doing well, but he's got this little kid, Harry, who is reminding him that, oh, I did something really, really shitty. And I think it had dire consequences.
Right.
And I would prefer if people, I think with Slughorn in the context of, does he really think so little of Dumbledore that Dumbledore would just like blab this out to everyone, or that Harry would blab this out to everyone?
That's a good point. I still don't know what it is that he's.
Yeah, I think it's more. It's not even about Dumbledore. It's about himself. He hasn't grappled with it himself.
He's very prideful, I guess, and
Because I constantly have to remind myself that when people are acting in a way that seems like illogical, and like if there's no physical tangible benefit, then the benefit has to be psychological. What is that?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Stuff is weird.
Any other thoughts?
I really think I'm trying to apply it to anybody else. I mean, Snape really wasn't that big of a player in this episode. I just think Slughorn's the most applicable. Card is the most applicable to him.
Mm-hmm. And alrighty, and then we move on to the Black Moon astrology cards, and I picked Mars.
Ooh, Mars in retrograde right now, or coming up, right? I don't know.
Oh, is it? All I know is that it's new moon in Scorpio tonight, and I will have to do a little ritual, you know, before I go to bed.
Well, I should probably do something, but I don't know. Might have to do it tomorrow. I think Mars is in retrograde. I'm going to look.
The Mars card suggests there is something you may have to fight for. The red planet, fiery Mars, is named after God of War, blah, blah, blah. Mars makes us shove hard in a way that other planets don't. One might call him the bully among the planets. Mars is the ruler of sexuality and aggression. This card also means to push back in terms of defense. When Mars is strong in a chart or a reading, you may either face aggressive situations with a need to confront or defend, or an intense, rousing sexual encounter which may or may not involve romance. Well, Harry wishes such a thing.
Mars retrograde starts the 30th, by the way.
Oh, okay. Despite Harry wishing that it was in a sexual nature, but no, it's Harry having to re-challenge and address and confront the situation with Slughorn and doing it in a way, but also still not giving up his obsession with Malfoy either, because he's gotten an inch by figuring out, oh, the room of requirement, and he's just running with it.
Yeah. 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 Well, we'll see how that goes. I got so distracted about the sexual part on the Mars thing. So sorry.
Yeah. This is a time where you feel not only forced, but driven. It is good time to consider goals and desires and not allow them to fall in the shadows. Right now, action is needed. It is not a good time to sit back and wait, which this is definitely how Harry feels in regards to both Slughorn and Malfoy. But is it necessary with Malfoy?
No, he needs to chill with Malfoy. And thankfully, he dropped the obsession for enough time to concentrate on getting the memory from Slughorn. So,
yeah, it's, yeah. But alrighty then, good stuff, good stuff. And now we move on to the last exercise, fan fiction time.
Well, I'm going the romance route because, you know, I love it. So we talked a lot about incest. We talked about all kinds of things, but I just wanted to speculate if Tonks and Sirius were a known item in just how that would have played out. I guess everybody would know why Tonks was upset, but would that have made them more powerful or less? I don't know.
I guess it's a question of, because there could be several scenarios at play. There could be that Sirius and Tonks were in a relationship, weren't telling anyone, because even though it's very common in their sphere of wizarding society, both of them are in positions where they try to rebel against that society. So I could see there being a sort, you know, for them internally, having a sort of shame that, you know, we're repeating a practice of, you know, a certain ethos in a family that we tried really hard to dissociate ourselves from. So, you know, there is the theory that you could have that they kept it secret purely for their own personal reasons. And then there's also the scenario that maybe the adults knew about it, but of course the kids didn't, because the kids are off at Hogwarts, you know, doing their own thing. So maybe this is only a shocker to the kids.
That, okay. So, and pardon me for not remembering the ages, but is there any possibility, and I don't know if this, you said there's a 10-year age difference between the two?
Yeah, Tonks is, in Order of the Phoenix, Tonks is 20 and Sirius is 34? Or okay. like early mid-30s. So okay. No more than 15.
My other theory is not going to be possible. So, what? Or if it would be bad, like what if it, I didn't know if it was like, so it was somehow his daughter, which is taking it in a very different direction, but it doesn't sound like,
that's not a possibility. And, okay. Cause her mother Andromeda is too old because. Okay.
Perfect. That's all I needed to know. Because I'm still like, I don't know how I feel about this. Okay. Yeah, I couldn't really.
Yeah, because and at least around the kids, if the adults know about it, you know, we've seen them interact at Christmas with Molly, with Remus, like they're not putting it on display or saying anything after the fact to the kids.
Okay. Well, it wasn't my best fan fiction this week, but.
But it is something to think about. And again, all the kids are picking up on is that Molly keeps trying to bring Tonks around to lure Bill away from Fleur.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the only thing that they're picking up on in regards to Tonks. Like no one else is giving them any information about specifically Tonks and Sirius.
Well, trouble. Trouble. Well, that was all I could think of. I guess if there was an alternative way to get the memory from Slughorn, but I think Harry kind of exhausted all efforts at the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just trying to think of a memory right now. I don't know. I was just thinking, like, what if Harry had been there when Aragog died? Like, what if there was a situation where Hagrid got Aragog out of the forest, like, while he was still alive, and, you know, had a little
spider cubbier. Hostess?
Yeah, like, and Harry goes and sees Aragog, like, die.
I don't know if Aragog knew some, like, intel that he could have shared on his deathbed, maybe? I don't know.
Just feel like, again, obviously we can't change what Harry, you know, experienced, you know, and right. These are his memoirs, but it's just the interesting notion of, again, there are a lot of thematic similarities between Chamber of Secrets and Half-Blood Prince, and specifically to Riddle's past. So it would have been, I think it would have been a nice touch if Aragog, like, on his deathbed, actually gave something, a useful piece of information, because that would have been relevant to when Tom Riddle was at the school as a kid.
That's a good point, because Hagrid makes it a point to talk about, like, he was a little baby and all this stuff, an egg in his cabinet, which is gross. But yeah.
Yeah, like, what if, like, maybe he was, you know, exploring the castle and he saw Riddle do something?
Yeah, that's a really interesting, that's too bad. Like, now I want Aragog to come back for
or a minute. What if Aragog had said, oh, I was sneaking around the castle and I saw Tom Riddle talking to this big fat potions professor.
Dun, dun, dun! And then that would have been, or like Lucius Malfoy, I don't know, to continue Harry's obsession.
Well, that would have been, Lucius Malfoy would have been born yet.
Oh, okay.
That would have been his father's time, Abraxas Malfoy.
Ah, okay. Well, any way to work in Malfoy there, Harry would have been like, hell yeah.
But yeah, that's all I could think of on the spot, because I think that would have been a nice thematic element of connecting chapters book and six, which are already connected in a lot of thematic ways.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
Only thing about you, Aragon. That would have been cool.
Alrighty then, and thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Pups. Tune in next time and we will go over chapters 23 and 24. Horcruxes. And,
finally.
Yeah, finally. And Sectum Sempra.
Don't know what that means.
Don't know what that means. All we know about it was a spell that Harry saw in the potions book, but he hasn't tried it yet.
Okay. Wow.
Well, yeah. So yeah. Yeah, we're going to get the tea on all the Horcruxes.
Thank goodness for me.
So yeah, catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Pups. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.